For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 3rd, 2021. You listen to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Idaho Long.
Do I have to call you Mr. Potato Head now?
Not yet. I haven't had enough potatoes for that yet, but by the time we leave here, probably.
Man, that is some change in vacation, huh?
Yeah, you're telling me. But we're very happy. It's been a lot of fun up here in Idaho. It's not Lake Tahoe, of course, but it's also not on fire. So
yeah,
we are enjoying ourselves and getting out and seeing some nature today. So won't complain. Lots of good dive bars here in Idaho too. So
that's cool.
It's a state made for us. So
do you know why they're called dive bars?
I do not.
Because back in the day, there were establishments that weren't exactly above board, and you had to dive down literally below the street to attend the bar.
Well, generally, those are our favorite ones if we have to climb down into a basement.
That's there you go.
Really good dive bar. Apparently an authentic one, according to you.
So. Yeah, that's it. You go down below street level, and you're in a dive bar.
Yeah, so the funny thing is we thought like potatoes would be like in your face everywhere. I guess that's like the ugly non-Idahoan.
right.
And they just haven't. So we've had potatoes. They've been good. But just nothing tremendous yet. Although we're going to the county fair tonight. So we're expecting good potatoes at the county fair tonight.
Absolutely.
And it's not definitely good people watching. All right. Well, another Ante Up World Championship has come to end, and as we mentioned on last week's show, it was just bonkers, the number of people coming out, and just a really, really good series. Had a lot of fun. It was good to see Thunder Valley do so well with so many people, and seeing all the friends and family that are out there, and just really good. So looking forward to another one, and whatever else Thunder Valley has coming up as well, too. But our main event came just shy of a $1 million prize pool, but almost doubled the $500,000 guarantee for the largest world championship main event ever. We were hoping it was going to hit $1 million, but we also knew that there was a chance that it wouldn't, and still at $985,000, I mean, who's counting, right?
So. Yeah, you should have thrown in the extra 15 for him.
Yeah. I would have thrown in the extra 7,500 if you know what I mean.
So. Yeah, right.
Wilson Tolone is our new world champion after a four-way deal early in the morning. When I say early in the morning, late early in the morning. So staying up waiting for that to end. Amir Lihavit, who finished third in the 2013 World Series of Poker main event, was the lone holdout in deal-making. And as soon as he was eliminated in fifth for about $45,000, the remaining four agreed to an ICM deal, giving them all $100,000 or more, and a big deal for one of the players whose only cash was in a World Series event a couple years ago for $3,000. So he just made, what, 30 sometimes his money?
Yeah, really? Holy cow. Yeah, that's huge.
Not bad. And you know, hey, I have a ton of respect for Amir for holding out. He obviously was by far the most skilled player at that final table. Though there were some other really good players. One of the players that did the ICM deal has four circuit rings as well, too. So, and most of the rest of them are very accomplished in Northern California. But Amir by far was the best player there. And I didn't talk to him, but you could just sense that he thought that he was going to be able to outplay these folks, and you know, a couple turns of the cards, and didn't happen.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't know what the chop would have been at that point with a fifth person in there, but probably 90,000 ish, maybe. So you know, left a little bit of money on the table by playing it out, but But man, what a structure! And that's what the quote unquote winner, that's what we call him, whoever has the most chips at the end. He really just raved about the structure of this event. So they started day two at 10 a.m. and it ended past 1 a.m. So they played a good 15 hours with 85 people coming back and the first 30 gone within like an hour or two.
Wow.
So yeah, those last 50 hung on for quite a while. And then the final table was, I didn't keep track of when it started, but I want to say the final table was probably a good 3 hour affair. And had they played it out, probably would have been a 6-7 hour affair. So, but that's what happens when you have a good structure. You have a lot of chips. You don't feel, you don't have to shove it in every hand.
Yep.
You're in play. So, but you could tell everybody was pretty tired. Our winner Wilson told me, he's like, "Hey, we played 15 hours. I was tired." One of the other guys had a 2.5 hour drive home, and they were ready to. Ready to call quits about an hour or 2 hours before they were able to. But fantastic event, lots of good money for four people that are hopefully going to put a lot of that money back in the poker economy.
That's pretty wild.
Paul P.B. Brown is this year's head-to-head champion, besting former Anti-Up NorCal championship champion and Anti-Up listener Jamie Heltke in the final match. Heltke would go on a few days later to have a deep run in the main event. I didn't get to watch too much of the head-to-head, but stacked field. You know, when I came down that morning to the shuffle open deal, I had a couple of people ask me why I wasn't in it, including Jamie. And I was like, "Do you see the names on that bracket?" It's usually pretty tough to begin with, but this year is just insane. Those names on that bracket, and was not going to sacrifice $400 for that. But
they're looking for a soft spot. They couldn't find a soft spot. They want to talk you into it.
I'm quite certain that's why everybody asked me that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're hoping to draw the Scott Long bye in the first round.
Scott Long bye.
Didn't happen. So, but yeah, another very good event. That one pretty late as well too. And another shout out to Jamie here. Second head to head, and then came into day two of the main event. One of the chip leaders and had a chip lead for the most part. He ended up getting eliminated by the future champion pretty late in that. But very good series for him as well too. So, congrats.
Yeah.
And then one of the fun stories this trip, Joseph Brandenburg was the player of the series after winning Big O in final tabling Horse and Limit Omaha 8. That was going to be my resume, I thought, but oh well. He had returned home to Oregon, but when he found out he held off a late surge from double event winner Ramel Damasco, he was back at Thunder Valley for day one of the main event to use his free entry, hotel room, and $200 resort credit. Super nice guy. He's known as the godfather of Big O. Apparently, he's one of the players that's really pushed this game into the mainstream and obviously won the event, so he knows what he's doing, and an accomplished mixed game player with his... accolades both Horse and Limit Omaha 8, which was a massive field this year. So that was pretty cool. And, so he flew home because, it doesn't sound like he plays a lot of No Limit Hold'em, but of course, when they're going to give him a free entry in a hotel and $200, easy to get back on that plane or car and get back to the valley. So,
right.
Got the wish on Friday, and apparently my luck, wishing him luck, did not really help him. But, yeah, fantastic. I mean, it's also happy for me to see a mixed game player win the player of the series because that never happens. It literally never happens. And I think one of the things about the size of the fields this year made it very rare that we only had one two-event winner. That's Ramel Damasco, who really came up just short of the player of the series. Usually we have a couple double-event winners throughout the series, but this year just the one. And I didn't do any stats on multiple cashiers. I guess that was probably part of the player of the series spreadsheet, which I can go back and look at. But I'd be curious about that, whether that number was down this year, too, just because of the size of the fields and the quality of the field.
Yeah.
But very, very impressive. And congratulations to Joseph. And, again, everybody at Thunder Valley, who took really good care of us and all the players that came out. And made it great. I got to do the little shuffle up and deal speech on day two of the main event, and really tried to be as heartfelt as I could about how long of the 16 months this has been for Antiope, how long it has been for Thunder Valley, and certainly how long it was for all those players sitting in those seats. So it was good to get back to whatever kind of normal is right now, and hopefully we'll have more normal, whatever normal is, going forward.
Cool.
All right, wow. So this next one, wow. Oh, man. It was a poker Twitter tsunami, and I'm not overstating that, I don't believe, Chris. Last Friday when the World Series of Poker announced that all players this year will need to be fully vaccinated for COVID if they wish to enter any events. Additionally, all spectators, media, and vendors need to be fully vaccinated, but staff do not. All, however, must wear a mask. The online reactions were exactly as you might imagine. And if I could express a smiley emoticon over the podcast, that's what I would do. Oh, man. So, like, Laura's out here, or was out here with me in California. Now she's out here with me in Idaho. But she would walk by the laptop, and I would just be giggling. And she'd be like, are you on Twitter? You're never on Twitter. I'm like, I know. I can't help it. And then the next day, I'm laughing again. She's like, are you on Twitter again? I'm like, yes, it's too good not to read. Oh, man. And it's, you know, and what I mean by that, it's not just, you know, I'm not just trying to be a snot-nose pro-vax guy here. There were some really, really funny tweets from folks. Like one of the Poker News live reporters said, I want to be clear that I'm boycotting the World Series Poker this year because I'm broke, not because I'm an anti-vax. It's one of my favorite ones, but there were so many other good ones. And there are a lot of news articles out there that summarize some of the best ones. So go read those. But all right, so I'm enjoying the humor of it. But obviously, this is a touch point for a lot of players as well, too. Interestingly, obviously, there's no scientific polling of what this means right now. But there's a number of people doing their own polls, whether on Twitter or other places. And of the ones I've seen, and maybe there are ones that I haven't seen that show a different story, but of the ones I've seen, it's showing about 50% of people in favor of this, 25% not in favor of it, and 25% indifferent, which really I kind of think is pretty much kind of the general stats for COVID in general and the vaccine from, folks that, you know, you've got a very passionate minority of people who are anti-vax. You got, you know, half, if not more than half, of folks that have got the vaccines, and doesn't necessarily mean that they are in favor of mandates by that, even if they have the vaccine. That's an important part to have, but still haven't been vaccinated. And then you've got that 25% in between that just really doesn't care for whatever reason. And that's always been my focus on the vaccination, is to go after those folks. Don't worry about the 25% that are never going to change their mind. And I think that's kind of the case in a couple of these, again, very unscientific polls I've seen. So.
We say this a lot on the show. For the people who are upset by it, you know, you don't have to go. You don't have to play. If you don't want to get this vaccination and you don't want to prove that you're vaccinated, you don't have to go. You know, and we say it a lot with the other stuff too. And we talk about the guarantees and stuff like that. And we always say, you don't have to play, you know. But you know, and this is just like any other business. It's a business. They're protecting their interests. They're protecting their players. They'd hate to be responsible for super spreader that kills people. You know, it's their job. It's their business, and it's their decision. And if that's what they want, I stand behind them. Now, if they didn't want to do that, you know, I'd have a problem with it. But you know, I don't have to play either. You know, if they say, oh, we're going to let everybody in, no matter who they are, and they could have COVID and have, you know, death dripping out of their eyeballs for all we care, then I'd be like, okay, well, I don't have to play this, you know? So it's the same with me in that. So in this case, I'm for the proof of vaccination. This, you know, are enough people dying or no? I mean, do we need more people to die? Do we need more people to be miserable? Do we need to shut down the whole country again? Do we need to shut down the poker industry again? Does our business need to just continue to suffer? Or can we just all be adults about this? You know, I'm just tired of it.
Well, yeah, and you make a good point in the fact that one of the interesting things I think about the boycott movement that started since then is that you had players who were not going to play prior to this decision, right? And now they weren't boycotting. They weren't, as you know, using those kind of words, but Chris Moneymaker's once, and hey, I've got a young kid. I don't want to expose them to accidentally expose them to COVID, so I'm just going to skip the series for the protection of my family. Frank Casella was another one of those too. And then once this was announced, Moneymaker said, hey, I'm going to consider going now. So there is a flip of balance there. There were players that, again, may not have been as vocal as the players now, that just were just not going to go. And now they're going to go, and then the players who are vocal and against this are not going to go. So that, I think, is an interesting uphill path for the boycotters. Because again, I mean, let's go back to what you said, and I wrote a column on this for CDC Gaming, if you want to go to cdcgaming.com about it. And the column was not about the health part of this. The column was about what we've mentioned on the show before, the business implications in the COVID world, right? Yep. You know, whether you are pro-vax or anti-vax, as a business owner, you have to respect that you need to make money. And sometimes doing something counter to your personal beliefs makes sense. Now, I don't know what the personal beliefs are of the World Series. I will say that the timing of this was really interesting. It certainly seemed like they were waiting for somebody else to make this decision for them.
Yeah, you know? Right.
I do think that this was something in the works for a long time. They waited as long as they could so they wouldn't be the bad guy and ended up doing what they had to do. And, you know, the other interesting thing, too, is, and I think we talked about this on the show, but if not, let me know. For most people that I've talked to, they were struggling to staff this series properly, right?
So yeah.
They needed 1,100 dealers. Depending on who I talked to, they were 100 to 500 dealers short. Again, a couple of weeks ago, and they still have a month to go. But one of the things that I had mentioned before, that this is a good way of maintaining the integrity of the series and not have to change anything, is if you require vaccinations, now you're going to have this group, let's say 25%, because that seems pretty common in these tools, that aren't going to come. So your field is 25% less, and now you need 25% fewer dealers, which probably works out in the math, right? So,
yeah.
So you know, so the other argument from the boycott folks that they probably don't understand is that they've kind of baked into this the loss in revenue because they weren't going to be able to really handle it anyhow. So so that's an interesting thing. Now, of course, the one weirdness in this, and that probably because they are struggling to find staff, is that was conspicuously absent in the press release that the staff needed to be vaccinated. Now, they specifically mentioned staff in the mask. I saw some erroneous, what I believe to be erroneous post. I mean, the series has not really specifically mentioned staff, but they were very clear. Players, spectators, media, and even down to vendors had to be vaccinated. They very easily could have put the word staff in there if that's what they meant, and they didn't. So, you know, you still have a, you know, a 1 in 10 chance of somebody at the table being unvaccinated. If you are concerned about that, then it's better than 1 in 50% of people at the table that
right.
was before.
Right.
Still, it's not a protective bubble. So there is that. And, you know, one of the things I would say, it's interesting how people argue vaccinations or mask mandates. You know, there's a lot of hypocrisy and arguments on both sides, right? And so one of the ones here – oh, shoot, I just lost my train of thought now.
A minute, but it finally happened. Scott Long talked for so long on the show.
It's because I don't have a soda this morning, drinking water.
He lost all train of thought. Meanwhile, I'm listening to your wife hack up a lung back there. I don't know what's going on in that. She's sick or something, you know?
Oh man! They just came back to me, and then you just distracted me with that funny thing about the water.
Oh jeez! No, blame me. That's fine. You always been blaming me for the last 15 years.
No, I don't. So, you know, one of the things that us pro-vax people have said is that, you know, either you can mandate a vaccination or a negative test, right? So if you take a negative test, then you don't have COVID. Then, you know, it's not the same for us that you didn't get the prick. But, you know, hey, at least we know you don't have COVID right now.
Right.
And you didn't do that. And so I think that's a reasonable complaint that the anti-vaxxers could have, is that, you know, there was a way for them to participate if they could prove that they did not have COVID. Ty Stewart in the World Series did address that and said that just because of the length of some of the events, that a, you know, 72-hour prior negative test is not quite the same for their business model as it is for a concert, you know, like a Alice Cooper concert, right?
Right.
Where, you know, if you're negative going in, the chances of you getting it there are Slim versus sitting there at a poker table for 5 days. Much better choice. So that's an interesting argument. But, you know, I do think they explained that well. But, you know, are open to fair criticism on that point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you're into the main event on day one and you have a negative, you know, result in front of you, and then you have to come back to play again for another week, you can go catch it easily in that week. And then what are they going to require you to get another negative test before you come back into the building every time?
Yeah, those too. So you have these rapid tests now.
They cost like $150.
Yeah, but you could charge a player for that. I mean, that's what some of the casino, some employers are doing now. You know, hey, you don't have to be vaccinated, but you do have to pass a test every time you walk in the building. And by the way, you're going to have to pay for that test. So, you know, if you're willing to do that, then you can. And, you know, for some players, you know, World Series is a lot of money. They might pay whatever that fee is to be tested. Yeah, to not be vaccinated. You know, again, it's easier just to be vaccinated, I think. But, you know, but that is one weakness in this decision. But, again, it comes down to what you said at the beginning. You know, you don't have to patronize every business. You can pick and choose. And, you know, no one's freedoms are being eliminated here. So you have the choice to play, and you have the choice not to play. So,
all right.
We'll see what happens, though. All right, the Women's Poker Association and Poker Power recently conducted a survey to gather actionable data to increase participation of women in poker. Some of the more interesting results released include the biggest reason women cite for not playing is not knowing how to play. And the second most popular response to what could bring more women to the game is classes and seminars, which came in behind more women's leagues and events. Patience is by far the skill respondents cited as learning the most from poker. And the number one reason for not playing in a poker room is an unwelcome environment.
Yeah, that's that last one has pretty much been the gold standard since we've, you know, even started the magazine and had female writers writing for us and doing women in poker and stuff like that. That was always the number one reason, you know, always was and probably always will be. The interesting thing when you say it's like people cited that they just don't know how to play, you know, that's pretty obvious, but it's not that they don't play because they don't know how. It's they don't have any interest. Like, I can't find... If somebody, you know, you don't want to learn? What do you mean you don't want to learn? Let's show you how to play. No, they don't want to learn. You know what I mean? That's what I've run into a lot, is that they don't want to learn how to play. Or when they finally do learn, they don't like it, you know?
Well, again, it's like the vaccinations. You make them easy to get. You incentivize people to take them, and people will get them, right? So I think this is the same thing. I think it's not so much that they don't want to learn. It's that if there was a class offered and well-publicized and people were asking them to go, they would probably go, right? But there's just not enough of those opportunities out there.
Who's going to do it, right? Like, who's going to – like, we've had, like, even here locally, you know, Jacksonville, Best Bet, they used to always have those beginner classes like once a week or once a month or something in their poker room, especially Orange Park. And I know Derby Lane hired us for a while. That they put on radio spots on the radio and stuff. I just don't know if there's enough return on investment for these companies to do it. Like, for a while there, I was teaching a lot of women how to play poker because back in the day when you and I first started, you know, Gene used to work for a country club. And they had a chain of country clubs that were all in the area. And they would ask me to go down on like a Wednesday night and teach women how to play poker. And we'd have a little mini tournament and everything. And we did, but that was it. That was the extent of it. I lost touch with them, but I don't know if they continue to play. So I just don't know about for that, it'd be worth it for a club because they don't care. They're trying to get members out to do something for the members. It looks like they're doing stuff for their membership and give them a night out and, maybe they'll pay $20 and they'll get some money toward their overhead or something. But, you know, for a poker room or poker establishment, I just don't know if the ROI is there for it.
Well, it could be with the proper staffing. Again, one of the things we're struggling with everywhere is staffing now. So, I mean, to do this kind of stuff now probably definitely is negative ROI.
Right.
You get back to full staffing, then I think a smart room would be able to do some of the stuff, and it would pay off for them in the long run. But I think really more, you know, this was a survey by the Women's Poker Association, and so I think they're looking for what they said actionable data. Now they have it, so I think they're the ones that are going to need to step up and partner with casinos and say, hey, we'll come in, we'll do the classes. You guys don't have to worry about it. Just provide us the space and allow us to market it. And I think any reasonable poker room would welcome that because you're bringing people in for free, right?
Yeah.
So now whether they have the organization to pull that off, I don't know. But I think that's the biggest actionable item on this list. You know, the unwelcome environment has always been number one on these surveys. And it's always been a difficult one because there are jerks at the poker table. We all know that, right? They're not always jerks just to women. They generally also jerks to everyone, though some are jerks much more to women than men. So there is that out there. It's a difficult thing to fix, though, because, you know, it's never going to be a completely friendly environment. In a poker room, in a public poker room, you know, a home game is a different story. But a public poker room, you know, you let everybody in as long as they're playing by the rules, not getting drunk and disorderly. They're going to be at the table, and depending on what your level of unwelcomeness is, you're going to feel that. There's lots of times. I mean, I felt unwelcome at an event this past week because the conversation was about COVID. And so, you know, that's a topic now. You know, you have to deal with it, right?
Yeah.
So. But I get it that some people just don't want to deal with it. There's lots of things to do with your free time now, and sitting at a table, you know, listening to people blast on about whatever, even if it's not directed at you, I can understand how that's not a welcoming environment. And I also understand that I don't really know how you fix that. You know, if you be too heavy-handed on it, then you don't have poker players. So.
Yeah,
that was a tough one, but teaching how to play, you know, that's definitely an actionable item for the Women's Poker Association. So we'll see what happens. And I was interested by this patience is the skill side of learning most from poker. I will say that my patience has been tested playing poker over the years. I don't think I've learned to be more patient at all. I think one of the weaknesses of my game is that I'm not patient enough. There are other things that I would list well before that, but I think that's interesting that that's what came up on this. And I should also mention that the survey wasn't just about from women. There were some men that responded to this as well, too. So, but I don't know. Is patience your number one skill?
Well, I think that it could be patience in that you have to be patient with the hands that you're selected to play, because everyone, when you play poker when you're a kid, that's why they always make everything wild, because you want to play every hand and have fun. Right. And so when you get into the real poker world, you want to be patient because you don't want to lose your real money. You want to, you know, take advantage of those brief moments when you have the upper hand or whatever. And so that is a good thing. I you know, obviously that's something that I've been tuned into in the last few years because of the whole bonsai thing. It really teaches you patience because you have to wait for things to grow and you have to wait for things to develop. And it's the same thing at a poker table. You have to wait for the right moment to develop and to take advantage of it. So, and again, it could be the other thing, too. It could be the patience with dealing with people, you know. I think that's my biggest skill that I've gotten out of it was how to deal with people. And I guess patience goes hand in hand with that. Dovetails right in there. So, but it's funny that you said that, though, that, you know, you lose patience. Because I think, you know, there comes a time where you get older and you become sort of a curmudgeon, you know, you're at that table all the time and you're hearing the same things over and over again. You're dealing with the same personalities over and over again. And eventually you just kind of snap, you know, and that's how you lose your patience. But yeah, I would agree with that. I think patience is probably a really good skill that emerges from learning poker and playing it, you know, a lot.
Interesting. All right, here's this week's update on poker room reopenings. In New York, Rivers Casino Schenectady has reopened its poker room with Anti-Up Call of Four columnist Elias Schechter as manager. Look at that. I forgot to put his name in there, but I remembered it.
We know who he is.
Very happy for Elliot that he's got that new room opened up. So get up there and see him if you're anywhere in upstate New York. And in Arizona, the WeCoPo Casino Resort, formerly McDowell Casino, has permanently closed its poker room. That keeps us holding steady of 268 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And remember to go to antiupmagazine.com, reopen to see all of those.
Any updates? Pape's the Antiup Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money sites available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month and rotate disciplines to the main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask Call the Four questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. You can buy t-shirts and hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. And if you're in Hand of the Week, a listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the aforementioned Antiup fans group on Facebook. We have a new O'Malley's move, and just a reminder, next week we're taking a week off for the show, so we'll get back to O'Malley's second part in 2 weeks. So here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a 50-cent, $1 no-limit hold'em home game. The level of this game is pretty solid, with most opponents knowing what to do. The game is six-handed, and the night is winding down. It's hour five of a six-hour game. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and the MP makes a raise to $3. This opponent is a mostly balanced player. He plays logical ranges for the game that he is playing in. He bought in for 100, got it up to 200, but is currently on a downswing and sits with $91. He's typically pretty even-tempered, but he lost his profit on two particularly rough hands, a cooler and a suckout. The cutoff calls, and we're on the button with $100 on our second buy-in. We're down 100. We look down at the King of Diamonds, Jack of Spades. I think this is either a raise or fold situation, but I'm a little gun-shy after losing in a boat-over-boat situation earlier in the night. We call. The small blind folds, the big blind calls, and we go to a flop. The pot is 1350, and it comes down the King of Hearts, Jack of Clubs, Seven of Spades. The big blind checks, and the MP bets $8. The cutoff folds. This flop couldn't be any more beautiful than it is. If our opponent had something like aces, queens, ace-king, king-queen, or ace-queen, we are in really good shape. I think I want him to hang himself. We call. The big blind folds, and with 29.50 in the pot, we see the nine of spades come on the turn. The MP checks. Other than queen-ten, which could be in his range, I don't think this card should scare us too much. I'm going to make a fairly large bet to make it look like I'm trying to steal this pot. We bet $20. Our opponent thinks for about 30 seconds before saying those dreaded words. Raise. I'm all in. So, it's $80 more to win a $130 pot. If we call and lose, we're down $191 on the night. What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands for situations. A podcast at AntiupMagazine.com. If you have something from us in the past year, you get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Dan England, longtime listener, is back this week. Chris?
Yes.
And let's see. All right. He said he wants to give us a hand, both in the literal and the metaphorical sense, Chris. Obviously, he's giving us a hand of the week, but he also wants to say bravo for continuing to crank out podcast every week except next week.
Yep.
I still listen and remain a fan. All right, so this is Omaha. He says he's playing with friends over a poker app for real money. Let's see. There's an automatic straddle in this game, so they're playing 50 cent, $1, to $2 with the automatic straddle. And he starts off in that automatic straddle with $193. He says the villain of this hand has us covered with $218. And let's see. Button calls, small blind completes, big blind is the villain, and he checks. And now it's on us with the queen of hearts, six of spades, queen of diamonds, and six of hearts.
I can assume this is PLO, yeah?
It's not like
yes. Omaha 8 or anything. Okay.
So did not say that, but I'm looking ahead, and the bets are PLO. Yes. Okay. And it does not look like high low. So, yeah.
Right.
So let's assume PLO. PLO.
No,
it'll be fine.
Right. Yep. Well, I hate this hand. I mean, I don't mind, you know, the fact that we got queens and we have sixes and we have two chances at sets and stuff, but I'm never really I don't hold a lot of clout with sets in Omaha. There's no nut hand here other than quads. You know, I mean, you're not going to make the nut flush unless it's ace-king hearts on the board. So, I mean, it's not a good hand, but since we don't have to worry about putting any more money in the middle, we could just check and hope we hit it really hard somehow. But, I mean, you can't make a straight. The flush you make better have the ace of the king on there. You know, if you make a set, it's going to be a small set. It won't be the top set or the second best set. You know, it's, you know, I just don't like this hand. I don't like it at all. But I'll check and see what happens. I'm definitely not raising.
Yeah, I think you said this right. I think this is a common trap for Omaha players is they see a double paired hand and they think they have two shots at sets, which you do. But remember how much money you lose with undersets. You know, you never get excited about a set in Omaha unless it's the top set. And sixes are almost never the top set. And if they are, you're probably in the risk of a straight draw or a straight already there. And sometimes for the queens as well, too. So, and we only have one flush draw here. And again, as you mentioned, it's the third nut. So you got some work to do with that as well, too. So obviously, we were able just to tap the table here. So, I mean, it's kind of an academic discussion at this point. But otherwise, if I'm asked to put money in the pot with this hand, really the only time I'm doing it with this kind of hand is like this past week at Thunder Valley in a cash game where, you know, they had that big jackpot for quads beaten by quads. So if I can get in cheap for $2 or something in a cash game and maybe hit that set and hopefully somebody outsets me and outquads me, yeah. Then it's $4,000. That's worth that $2 or $4 investment, right? But otherwise, in the tournament, this is hitting the muck every single time except for here when we don't have to put more money in. So
100% agree.
All right, our hero disagrees. He says this is a nice hand. There's a decent flush possibility and a double chance at a set, but it's also a hand that gets you in trouble. He says, I just check. Thoughts? Well, right. Well, he already explained that. So he did the right thing, though. At least he didn't raise.
Right.
All right, flop is the 9 of diamonds, 8 of clubs, 9 of clubs. And we are first to act, which is interesting because didn't the...
Yeah, we're under the gun, right? So it should be third to act.
Small blind completes and big blind is villain and checks. Yeah, so we should be third act. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand how they're playing this, but all right. Let's assume he's first act because that's what he's saying he's doing. So,
this is weird. Okay, well, this is a horrible flop. There's all kinds of straight flush possibilities, all kinds of single sets, you know, trips because nine. Now anybody got just a random 9 and they beat our queens. It's just a terrible flop for us. So, I mean, there's nothing here for us at all. And, in fact, there's 2 clubs. We don't have a club in our hand. We have hearts and spades and diamonds. So I don't – this is just terrible. So I'm just checking. You know, it's check fold.
Check fold, absolutely, all day long with us. So, and again, I think people get excited because there's another pair there, and we have a higher pair in our hand, or actually we had 2 pairs, so we hope we can pull it up. But again, that's problematic. So, because now you're talking 2 outs or 4 outs if you want to count the 6s, but then you have an underboat, so you really shouldn't be counting those. So you've really turned this hand into a 2-outer, and it may not even be a good 2-outer at that point. So I can't tell you how many times, you know, we joked last week about being Quadzilla at Thunder Valley, but it wasn't just me. There were a ton of people in quads. That just happens in Omaha. So
yeah.
You should not be surprised if somebody turns over quad nines here in this hand. So that's another reason not to get too excited about spiking one of those 2 queens.
Yeah, if you think about it, I mean, you have a button and 2 blinds are in the hand with you. That's 12 cards. That's like almost a quarter of the deck. You know, the odds of there not being a 9 in hands that were forced to play these hands, basically. You know, it's one thing right. If you knew under the gun plus 1 folded, well, he probably might have had a 9. But the guys who were forced to play the hands, basically, you know, they could easily have a 9 in their hand. Maybe 2 9s. You know, maybe 9-8. And you're basically drawn to double queens or a queen. So I hate this hand altogether.
All right, our hero bets 450. He says, this is a decent hand to bluff with, and it's even possible I have the best hand. Folds to the big blind who calls. The big blind, who's also the villainous hand, is an outstanding player. He's the top money winner by far in this game. He is capable of any play. He's not a maniac, but can float and bluff and gamble. He usually gets his money in good. He's a very dangerous player. He says, I am viewed as a tight, conservative player, especially by him, because that's how I've generally played my whole life, and we've played together many years. I'm a little more aggressive than that in this game, but generally it's the correct viewpoint about me in any poker game. All right, so this makes this hand even worse, I think, right?
Yeah.
See, we're out of position. Well, presumably. Well, we're in position, but out of position to go in.
Yeah, right.
I don't know where we are here, but we're now heads up against a player who we've acknowledged is better than us. We have a very inferior hand here, and I think the only thing coming going in our favor from what this new information is that our opponent considers us tight and conservative, so he's going to give us credit for a much better hand than we have here right now.
But which makes it even more scary that he called, right?
Exactly, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, all right, we'll see what happens here. It says the turn is the six of clubs, so our board is now nine of diamonds, eight of clubs, nine of clubs, six of clubs. And again, for some reason, we are first act.
Well, this is terrible, actually. It'd be okay if it was a queen. But the fact that it's a six means that now the 9-8 or the 9-6 that's out there, you know, we're gonna lose a lot more money because we have a boat, and it's an under boat, under full. And it's terrible. You know, this is where we get in trouble because we had to play this stupid hand. We bet out with it. And now, okay, you've hit your six, but it's not a good... I mean, every time you read a book about poker that talks about Omaha, Omaha 8, they're always talking about the dangers of underfulls, you know? Yep. And, you know, you can't get excited over this, you know? And to bet out now would be crazy. Why did he call our bet if he knew we were tight? If he knew we were tight and we made a bet, he would think that I can beat that hand with what I have. So that means he's got a 9 in his hand, maybe 9-8, maybe 2 9s. So, yep. To me, I'm not excited by this 6 at all, and I'm still checking.
No, I think I checked this down the river. I'm probably not going to fold it because of the boat and the possibility that we have that one outer coming for quads. But I'm not going to bet here. And it's interesting because we bet out on that first board, and then to slow down now probably invites a bluff, which I guess is great if he's really bluffing, but that doesn't seem likely. I think you're right. He's got a 9, and whether he has a boat yet or not, remember, he's got another card to come, and he's got 3 cards in his hand beyond that 9. So that's the real trouble with the underboats. So, I'm going to check call here and hope I'm good. But we're in a bad spot here with what otherwise would be considered a good hand.
And I just want to be clear. It's not just because it's hand of the week and we always assume that they're going to lose this hand. This is legit. Like, this is legitimate, you know, criticism of not him, but of this playing this hand and getting excited about it. This is the type of hand that gets you in trouble all the time. Whether he wins this hand or not, I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. But, or I don't. You might. But, you know, this is legitimate here. This is the kind of thing that you need to be worried about. And it's not just because it's hand of the week and he probably loses. This is what gets you in trouble. This is how you get into trouble. So I am not betting again, especially since he called. He's got to have a 9, at least one 9 in his hand. And if he does, I'm like you. I'm going to like hope to check call, and hope it be reasonable. And, hey, if it turns out I had the best hand, I'll take one hand of not getting max value over it without losing my stack instead. So,
yeah, absolutely. All right, Hero bets $18. He says it's possible that he has a straight here or a flush and may call in response, since it's also possible that I have an overpair, a 9 or an 8. He may also think I have a lower flush or a straight. I think that it's a possible lower hand will call bet. Plus, considering I'm a tight player here, it's possible that he won't put me on a 6. Thoughts? Well, he's probably not putting you on pocket 6s here. He probably doesn't think that helped, but... But again, whether you're ahead or not, a good player, as he's been described, does not play for straights and flushes with a paired board. You know, you just have those hands because it's too easy to have somebody boat up on you, which is what just happened here. So I really think, and again, I don't remember what happened here. It's been a while since I got this hand, but I would not be surprised if we're losing right now, or we will lose for a river card here. So. I don't think he's putting us on any of those hands, and I think we're not giving him credit for the hands that he has. All right, our villain raises to $54.
I'm out. I mean, I got to be out. I just because I have a full house, I don't think I'm going to start. I mean, what do we start with? Like 190 or so. So, I mean, if I'm going to call this, there's going to be a bet on the river too. And he clearly has us here. I can't imagine our hand being the best hand. It's got to be he's got 9-8 or something. Because, I mean, are you really going to call hoping to hit quads? And even then, you still could be drawn dead. Anybody who raises on a paired board has a boat. There's no way that they're that savvy to think that. And especially if they know you're tight. if you're tight and you're betting with a paired board and they're calling you and then raising you, your under full is not good. And if you know, if you're cognizant of your reputation at that table, which he is, he said it, then you have to know your beat here. I have to lay it down. You know, you took a stab at with the 450, you took a stab at with the 18. Now this guy's raising you 3x. I don't think he's making a move on you, you know? And then I think you also said something about he tends to show down the best hand. So, I mean, this guy, he's quality player, and he's showing down the best hands. He knows you're tight, and he's raising you on a paired board. You got to let it go.
Yeah, this is an easy fold for me. It's just not going to work out well for us here. It's an interesting thing because I've been thinking about this. I've got a couple friends that have been wanting to learn to play Omaha. And, you know, one of the lessons, the quick lessons, probably the first lesson, is to let them know about hand inflation in Omaha, because you got those four cards. The winning hand is a better hand. So you can't get excited with the same hands you get excited with in No Limit Hold'em. So, you know, vote No Limit Hold'em is a hand to get excited about, usually. In Omaha, it's a death wish. You know, you just improve, but you wish you didn't improve, is usually what happens. And so, yeah, so while we have a full house here, we still probably have a loser here. And it's time to get out. So
I unfortunately learned that lesson at the table rather than listening to a podcast or reading a book. And, you know, I just, the whole day, we were playing in our home game, and it was at your house. And the whole day, I would build up my stack playing all the other games. Then we'd get into Omaha, and I would keep making the second best hand. You know, and I would, and it, you didn't realize that you had to tighten up when you get more cards. You don't loosen up, you tighten up. And it's like, people don't get that. And I didn't get it. I learned my lesson. It was an expensive lesson. But, you know, that's how you learn, is to really figure it out. And in this case, you know, queen, queen, 6-6 is not a hand to get invested in. And when someone's betting over you like that, yeah, you're done.
All right, our hero says again, he's capable of this with any flush or straight, as he knows I'm tight and will fold hands such as a straight or flush given the board is paired. He could have ace-ace here, and given that, the ace with another club. Ace-ace or king-king is a possibility because he won't go nuts with ace-ace. He won't always re-raise with it, especially if the pot won't be big enough to go all in with it before the flop or after the flop, and we weren't heads up. I believe I have a disguised full house, and there are only 3 to 4 hands that beat me, all of them unlikely I call. Well, I will say that your full house is disguised. The full house is disguised, but those 3 or 4 hands that beat me, they are very likely, not unlikely, likely.
I can't see them being unlikely. Yeah, I mean, the 6-6 hand is disguised, but there's a, you know, bright and center stage full house that's been out there since the flop that is a typical hand that people would play or even have in their hand because they have 4 cards, and that's 9-8 or 9-9 or 8-8. And I just don't see why those aren't hands that would be in his hand. I see it, especially because I think this person was in the blinds. I think he said the villain was the big blind, so he was forced to play his hand anyway. So yeah. I don't see why it's
still,
not
strapped. So he still had to put $1 in that he didn't need to. But yeah,
I know. Yeah, okay, but so $1, right? Yeah, exactly. But it wasn't like he was entering it willfully with no money. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he was under the gun. The button or whatever.
Well, the thing is he didn't raise either, so the fact that we're considering aces and kings in this hand does not make sense to me. Now, he did say he won't always re-raise it, and he gives reasons for it, but generally, you know, you're raising with aces in PLO high and kings, and particularly in this spot. So I think those 2 hands are very unlikely because there wasn't a raise there. Now, obviously, he's played with this guy a long time and knows better than I do, but most players are going to be raising those aces or kings, so...
Yeah, I agree.
Literally staring down at 1 and hopefully not 2 nines here.
Yeah.
All right, the river is the 7 of diamonds. So our final board is 9 of diamonds, 8 of clubs, 9 of clubs, 6 of clubs, 7 of diamonds. And apparently he's acting first this time and bets $100.
Well, I'm starting to wonder if maybe he just didn't include that he checked to him or something this whole time. But
could be.
You know what I mean? But all right, so he bets 100. Yeah, I'm letting it go.
Yeah, well, again, we were out of it before then, so yeah, the 7 doesn't help us at all. I mean, we were hoping we had 1 card that could help us, and that was a 6. And as you mentioned, that might not have been good either, so the fact that we didn't get it, we get it. So, all right, our hero does shove his remaining tiny bit. He says, And the opponent shows 9, 8, 9 deuce for flop quads. And our hero says, I've never flopped quads in my life. Good callback. And he says, not true, but too hard to resist. Again, I played 3 fairly decent sessions of Omaha this week. Now, granted, Omaha 8, but and I saw 3 flop quads in those 3 sessions. So once a session, I saw flop quads. In a session of probably 6 hours, maybe. So like once every 6 hours, there's a flop quad. So that stuff happens a lot more often than you think in Omaha. So we were given those warning signs from the beginning. And then look at this. He had the 8-2.
I know. The overkill there.
Didn't need it, but hey, whatever. Why not? It's kind of interesting that he was raising it throughout this too. I mean, this is the danger when you have flop quads is how do you maximize value for it? Because you've essentially crippled the deck, and now you're hoping that somebody has the underboat, but you have one of the cards for the underboat in your hand. Yeah. So really hard to imagine that somebody's sitting on eights full of nines there. Now when the 6 comes and we continue to bet, then we're hoping that we have the hand we had, right? Which once again is the weakness of the underboat. So, we got really unlucky there. He got really lucky that we improved, although it sounds like we might not have gone away anyhow. We thinking our hand was better than it really was. So, not surprised. Unfortunately, I feel bad for Dan, but not surprised.
Yeah. The villain called on the flop. So he only called that bet. He's like, okay, I flop quads. I'm not going to raise here. I'm going to chill and just let this guy bet into me. So once he flopped the quads, and then we bet again on the turn, now he's saying, oh, man, I hope he has the case eights. And because he's betting now, I might as well. And we've talked about this a lot with who's the pro that was, oh, my God, Clay Aiken, right? What was his name? Gelfond. I saw an interview with him, and we've talked about it on the show a lot, too. He always says the money in Omaha, especially pot limit, is always made on the turn. Yeah. And so because at that point, you know, you've invested, you're in it, you've made your hand, and at the turn, that's when people are saying, okay, I want to make the most out of this hand, because by now, if they're still in this hand, they've got something in Omaha, so it's safe for me to raise here. So now this guy is thinking, all right, he's got 8-8, or he's got 6-6 on the turn, and he's still betting into me, so now I think it's safe to raise him. And he did.
Or a flush. He could put us on a flush there.
And then a flush, too, which, exactly. So he's got all these hands that he's thinking, I think it's safe for me to raise now. And if not, he's not going to – if I call his 18, he's probably not going to bet the river, and then I'm going to bet the river. And,
yeah,
you know,
to maximize value with a flop quads in any game. It's easier no more. But, yeah, so you're right. So, yeah.
Just incredible. I mean, just – and like you said, overkill, too, with the 8 on top of it. He had the 8 as well. But, I never get involved with hands like this if I don't have to, and I really got to hit it hard to stick around. I could never imagine betting out on that flop. Or, you know, again, now, if it was the way we were saying later, was that it was being checked to him and he was first to bet, then it's like, okay, he might try to steal it. But once somebody called your 450, then it's like, all right, there's a chance somebody has a 9. And then when you hit your 6 and you bet your 18 and somebody raises you, yeah, okay, it's a really good chance that we're behind a lot here. And even quads might not be good. And of course, in this case, they weren't. So
yeah, they weren't.
Yeah, that's just a lesson to be learned here: is underfulls suck, and you really have to tighten up when you play Omaha.
All right, our hero says that he failed to ignore 2 key facts. 1, the board is paired, so would he really push that harder with a straight or flush when it's obvious that me, a tight player, likes this board in my hand? Yeah, we already dismissed that.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
And 2, he knows I'm a tight player, and yet he's betting the pot on the river after I called his turn raise, meaning he has to put me on a great hand. So what does he have? He doesn't have just a straight or a flush. He said it would be a reckless bluff for him to shove, hoping I would fold when the 7 hits, which really didn't change anything. Underfolds in Omaha are very expensive, and you have to learn how to fold them. I think I could have thought about the 2 key points above. Yep, absolutely. I mean, I don't think you're going to make that mistake again. So,
yeah, I wouldn't say the 450 is a mistake, but when he calls, then that's the reason you're betting the 450, not just to steal a few dollars. You're betting the 450 to see if someone's going to call. Because with a board like that, that's paired and wet, you know, 2 clubs and the straight draw stuff, you know, you've gotten your answer there. That this guy is interested in this hand for some reason. And then when you on the turn you bet again and he raises you, you've gotten your answer. So yeah, when he wanted to know, you know, he said they're expensive and I agree. I think that you need to learn to get away from it. And that was the point where you could have gotten away from it. He could have either checked the turn and then called an $18 bet, or he could have bet his 18 but then gotten rid of it after that. He would have, he had his answer at that point, and instead of losing 130 more, he lost just a minimum of 18 there. And so that's the point right there where you have to learn to fold that turn. You know, just like it's the street that makes the most money, it's also the street that can save you the most money.
Yeah. Well, and I think the things that he learned there are some of the reasons I really like Omaha, because Omaha actually makes your decisions easier, or makes you figure out, narrow down hand ranges a lot more, I think. Yeah. It's weird to think that because you've got four cards, you've got twice as many cards. But when you're looking at how people play things, you know, it's very easy on the river to fold. You know, I think I mentioned on last week's show that when I got upset at that, when the woman bet and then someone raised and I folded the straight when there was a flush on there and no one had the flush, right? That happens so rarely, though. I mean, in that case, it's almost always somebody has that flush when that final card gets center flushes, or if that straight finally gets there and they bet into you when you've been betting the entire time. So it's frustrating to fold there, but all the clues are there, and it's easier to fold as much as it hurts, right? Much harder to do a no limit hold'em when, you know, there's a lot more to bluff with there. So, you know, I think particularly at lower limits, and, you know, it's a friendly game, so I don't know what the limits, how they really correspond, but normally 50 cent, $1, $2 game would be friendly limits. You know, people kind of play standard, and so it's a little easier to get out of these situations than it would be a no limit hold'em when you can easily be bluffed off of any hand with anything. So
I agree. Well, sorry about the expensive lesson, but hey, you know what? You made the show, so that's good. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.